When a parent dies, you have to go through a lot of stuff. Not just emotional baggage, stuff. Old photos, forgotten receipts, matchbooks, foreign bills from old vacations, old letters that got used as coasters. When your father is William F. Buckley, famed debater, writer, editor, wit, and the father of modern conservatism, there are also things like the Presidential Medal of Freedom and a press pass from a space launch.
Here's an Apollo 8 press pass. I went to that with him. It was in, it would have been in like 1968. That's where I met James Dickey, the poet, for the first time. It was about 10 o'clock in the morning after the launch, and my dad brought him by. He was yet to become very famous because Deliverance hadn't come out yet. But I was very impressed because this was my first, you know, real-life poet that I met. And he was gloriously drunk at 10 in the morning. I mean, really, but, you know, sort of Huggy Bear kind of drunk. Yeah. And he said, is your name Christopher? I have a son named Christopher, too, you know. And he gave me a big hug, and I thought, God, I want to be a poet when I grow up so I, too, can be drunk at 10 o'clock in the morning. This seemed like a great thing.
With our friend Christopher Buckley and his parents' old apartment in New York City on the second anniversary of his mother's death. Of course, Christopher's parents, Bill and Pat Buckley, were glittering, famous, and funny. They died within a year of each other in 2007, 2008. They were devoted to their son Christopher and to each other. But Christopher Buckley says that they didn't speak to each other about a third of their time in their marriage.
Maybe one-fifth.
Okay.
They didn't speak to me at least a third of the time.
Christopher Buckley, of course, is best known as a satirist, but he's now written his most personal, saddest, but still a funny book about the year in which he lost both of his parents. It's called Losing Mom and Pop. And thanks very much for letting us be here on this day with you.
Thanks for coming.
Let's go to another room and sit down. Christopher takes us down a grand staircase into what was his mother's favorite room. It's fire engine red and cozy. The first floor window faces Park Avenue. Your father loved you, adored you, uncritically. But when it came to critically assessing your writing,
He was a tough grader. He always was. He was very encouraging, but he was a tough grader. If he thought something was not up to snuff, he said so. And I think that made for very good training. Later on, I sent one of my books, which was getting pretty good reviews. His only comment about it was, sorry, this one didn't work for me, which is a short response, I suppose you might call it. In this very room, actually, I have a very sweet memory about his encouragement of my writing because I had written my very first story for New York Magazine. I was sent by New York Magazine to Las Vegas for 2 weeks to cover a Frank Sinatra gig. I'd written this story and I was very nervous about it, as you can imagine. I was 22, and I gave it to him. And he went upstairs, and I sat at this desk sort of nervously waiting for him to give me his verdict. And he stuck his head around the corner, and he held up his fingers and the okay sign. And it was really, you know, about the happiest moment of my life.
Your mother was fiercely funny, fiercely beautiful, and she could tell some real whoppers.
Yeah, she was, roughly speaking, the wittiest woman I've ever known, possibly the wittiest person I've ever known. But she had a casual relationship with the truth. And I think sometimes she did it just to make a story more marvelous or fun. And sometimes she did it to cover up, I think, some basic insecurity. She never finished college. She left Vassar and married my dad. And I think that left her with some lingering insecurities. She was an innately bright woman, but she was capable of telling a whopper or two, and she was also capable of, as Henry Kissinger noted in his eulogy to her, she was quite capable of interrupting Henry Kissinger in mid-paragraph to inform him that he knew nothing whatsoever about European history. And she had this kind of authority that Henry Kissinger would sort of look meekly at his plate and go on eating rather than contest it. She was quite an extraordinary woman. Well, to quote Kissinger again, he said that she used to say about herself that she was just a simple girl from the backwoods of British Columbia. And in his eulogy, he repeated that and he said, "If Pat Buckley was a simple girl from the backwoods of British Columbia, I would tremble to meet a sophisticated girl from the backwoods of British Columbia."
What's it like to have a mother that intense, that prominent, that important to other people?
Well, you know, I watched her evolve. You know, there was a period early on when she was a carpooling suburban Connecticut mom. At any rate, she became a sort of a dazzling figure of New York society. And she and my dad had a kind of binary glamour because he was the intellectual, and she had beauty and style. So together they made really for quite a formidable pair. But as I say, when it's your mom and your dad, you know, that's not the most important thing. You know, the most important thing with your mom and dad is your relationship with them. And you know, there were times when their stature made them a little less accessible than, call it, your average mom and dad. But they were, you know, they were loving. They were loving, but they were, you know, they were loving on their own terms. You know, they were very busy people.
It's very painful in the book to read about these two glittering people having to contend with what they did in the last year of their lives.
Yeah, he had emphysema and diabetes and sleep apnea and a host of sort of other things. And Mom, she just kind of gave up. She kept falling and breaking things. She was very tall, and anyway, she just sort of gave up. And in the fashion of Victorian ladies, just after she broke whatever bone it was, she just took to her bed and stayed there. You know, she took to her bed to die. And it was, you know, it is sad to see well, anyone deteriorate like that. Old age ain't for sissies. And when she died first 2 years ago on this day, and that was, you know, kind of a blessing, really. She went into the hospital to have a stent installed in her leg, and the operation went bad, so she died of an infection. And I was almost grateful, you know, because she was undergoing it would have been the death by 100 cuts, and it's very hard to see someone so very beautiful endure that.
I have to ask about the last words to your mother.
Well, I had raced to her bedside. She was in a coma. She was past hearing. And I held her hand and I said, you know, I forgive you, which was, you know, Mom could be very naughty and do, you know, hurtful. I said it to her on her deathbed, I think more for my peace of mind than for hers, because she was a proud woman. She never would have, you know, she was not a woman who said, "I'm sorry for having, you know, caused a scene or whatever." She just couldn't bring herself to do that. So, and she was not a religious woman, so she wouldn't have asked a priest for absolution. So anyway, I've just found myself saying that to her, and I hope when I'm on my deathbed, people forgive me, because there's a lot to forgive, you know.
You have a great phrase in the book where you say your father, like all great men, always had a little too much canvas.
I said that in my eulogy at St. Pat's. I sailed across three oceans with him, and he'd always be putting up more sail. You know, the squall would be coming in, which is typically when you reduce sail, and he would throw more up. And I used it as a metaphor, I thought, because great men always have too much canvas up. That's sort of what makes them great men. It can be interpreted sometimes as recklessness, I think it's an aspect of their bigness. My dad was the most impatient man I knew. He would, red lights, those were for other people. I once followed him to church one Sunday. We had to go in two cars because there were weekend guests. And he went through 11 consecutive red lights. And I said, when we got to the church, I said, you know, I feel as though I've come to the church for last rites, not Sunday Mass. And, you know, he was oblivious.
Are there times when you get up and want to call them, email them?
Oh, I, you know, reach for the phone almost every day. I mean, because Pop and I were, you know, he was many, many magnitudes of intellect and everything above me. But we were somewhat in the same world, and we were both writers, you know. And so we could talk shop, and we also, you know, obviously followed the news and followed politics. And, you know, I mean, I would have loved to have, everything that's happened since he died, you know, the election of Obama, Sarah Palin, John McCain, you know, the Somali pirates, because we sailed, and, you know. Oh, yeah. And there were so many things that I would love to talk with him about. Now, yeah, I do find myself reaching for the phone, and then, you know, I really don't know why I wrote the book. And in the end, I just sat down one day and started writing it. And I wrote it in 40 days, just sort of poured out. I got to spend 40 more days with them, you know, when they were in their prime. You know, because my remembrances of them in the book are when they were young and vital. And so very amazing.
Christopher Buckley, his new book, Losing Mum and Pup. Thank you.
Thank you.
And you can hear more of our conversation with Chris Buckley on our website, npr.org. This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon.